CliffCentral.com.
Okay, everybody. Good morning, good morning, good morning, good morning. Let's do this. Let's get cracking. We have things to do, people to see, places to go. It's Tuesday morning. CliffCentral.com on the 13th of April. But it's Tuesday the 13th. So if you're one of those people who's worried about, like, what is it? Triskaidekaphobia, you don't have to stress, because the 13th of anything is fine if it's not on a Friday. All right. We're very happy this morning. Well, I am anyway. I think Sia is too. I'm going to judge by his face. I think Sia's happy too. Nina Hasty is with us this morning. Hey, Neens, what's happening?
Are you?
I love that accent. That's when you have that. What's that character called that you do?
Mrs. Smythe.
I love her.
Any love of her.
Yeah, how are you doing? What's going on? What, you don't like your headphones? Now we can't hear you at all.
Wait, you muted yourself, Nina?
No, I don't know what she's done. It was going so well, and then she decided she was going to mess with stuff. This is what always happens. No, now we can't hear you anymore. I'll tell you what, go out, come back in.
You need to unmute yourself?
We can't hear you.
Still can't hear you.
This is like talking to Mrs. Smythe, your grandmother. All right, now she's having a bit of a meltdown there. We'll give her a second while Nina figures shit out. Beautiful.
Love this.
Let me see if I can't do it on my side. Hang on. Can't unmute your guest.
No,
your mic is not connected according to the controls here. Yeah. No.
We'll sort it out.
Go out and come back in. All right, so there's a lot going on this morning. Got a huge number of things on the agenda that we want to get into, and we'll get into all of those in just a second. If you want to join in the conversation, you can do that by leaving your comments on the YouTube channel, which is, of course, live. And since we're talking about the YouTube channel, don't forget to like and subscribe. It's very important that you do this. Why? Well, so that we can keep track of these numbers. Like anyone else on YouTube, we're doing it because we can reach a much bigger audience, and we want to know who that audience is. So that when we have advertisers and clients, they know what the hell they're getting in it. Neens, are you back?
I am back, gentlemen. Sorry about that.
No,
I kept going, please wait. We appreciate your call. Please wait. We appreciate your call. You are number one in the queue.
I've got to...
These early mornings are just not child's play.
Listen, I've got to compliment you on something. I saw... Over the weekend, in the wake of that really horrible story with Nelly and what happened with her in Cape Town's, AKA's fiance, and I saw a long thread that you put up about mental health, and I know that it's something that everybody thinks they can talk about these days. And listen, there are one in three people in the world who are affected by some kind of mental health issue, but
indeed,
I thought the way that you did it was really, really beautifully put. You explained things very well. You brought in your own personal experiences, and you helped, I think, a lot of us to understand what might be going on. Not that we know enough about that particular case, because I don't know that any new details have come forward yet, except that she died in this horrible way and fell to her death from the 10th story or whatever it was. Just an awful, awful story. But I loved the way you did that, because instead of just turning it into a, this is a terrible story situation, you might have helped some people to understand mental health, and also some people are going through it to be understood. So, you know what? Thanks for that.
You know, there was a macabre irony to the whole thing, in that the very next day I had found out that I lost one of my close friends from school that I grew up with that passed away. The family haven't released details. There was a suspicion of suicide. So the whole of yesterday I was completely unhinged. It actually was on the news. His name is Phumlani Phikoli. He's an author. And I actually have his book here. It's so funny. I'd pulled it out the day, like on Sunday when I was going through that, when I was explaining that depressive episode, and I'd pulled out his book, The Fatuous State of Severity, which is this book. I'm sure you might be even familiar
with him. Is he by any chance related to Vusipikoli?
He's Vusipikoli's son.
Okay. All right. Yeah, sure. You know, that's horrible. So this happened on Monday.
Yeah. The news broke on Monday, but it happened on Saturday. So it was so weird because I'd experienced such a low on Sunday morning. When did I tweet the thing? Was it on Sunday morning? Saturday morning, whichever day it was.
I only saw it on Sunday night. I mean, there's so much that I want to unpack with you in that because you said something about sleep, for example, that I thought was really, really useful and instructive. And we'll get into the detail in a second. But I mean, did you ever meet AKA's fiance Nelly? Did you know her at all?
I had not met her. I'm actually very close friends with AKA's mother, Lynn. And you know, I try and keep my relationship with her and her son and whoever he's dating out of the picture. But I was aware of, you know, of the shift in the relationship, and you know, obviously I know Zintle, and the whole thing was, you know, it was quite complicated. She was a young girl. I didn't know her personally. I didn't get to experience her personally. So I don't know her personality, whether she was bubbly or if you could have noticed highs. There was also another quite a high profile in my social circles. His handle was the Dapper Black Nate, a friend of Deleuze and all of that had committed suicide a few days before as well. So within my immediate circles, sort of three suicides in a week. It was three deaths, including Dr. Cindy, you know, which sort of led me to write the, you know, Dr. Cindy obviously was a COVID related death, but I don't know. I felt the need to explain this to people because a lot of people are left bewildered. Like, what do you mean suicide? How did I not know this? How did I not pick this up? How did I not know that you could possibly be experiencing depression if you're a bubbly, outgoing person myself?
I can't tell you the number of times that I've had that exact same conversation with so many people where I've been the one to say, how is it that these people who look to the outside world so happy and they look so relaxed and they look like their life is good, how is it that those people are the ones who succumb to these demons? And I thought, honestly,
do you remember
I've read so many people's explanations, and I thought yours was the best one I've understood so far. You went to some trouble to explain
it. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. You know, I've actually got a bit of a complex that I am not succinct enough, and that I don't tell stories in a linear fashion, and that I don't have like clear narratives because I'm quite ADD and I like to write in free form. So sometimes my stuff doesn't follow like a particular narrative. And I realized that it whittled down to discipline and practice. And I've been practicing being thorough when I explain things.
Well, I mean, look, it's a totally different skill to what you do in stand-up, right? Because in stand-up, the whole way that the story weaves around is actually part of what makes it funny. And I think when you're writing things about serious stuff like this and people think you're funny, you have to be that much more careful not to be ridiculous, because you're dealing with something which is obviously the opposite of ridiculous. I wonder how many people are silently going through so much shit at the moment, because, you know, COVID might have just opened up a can of worms. We know that there are so many people who are pretending to be fine, and there's so many people who on social media are pretending not just to be fine, but great when they're really not. It's tough. It's tough in terms of health, obviously, with what's been going on. It's tough in terms of money for many people. It's tough in terms of the relationships that they do or don't have, the relationships that are either going much better than they think they deserve, or much, much worse than they had hoped they would be. And then there's, you know, there's a whole range of other shit. There's genetic stuff you inherit. There are there are people who just have the brain chemistry just does not help them to live a very satisfactory life, and they beat themselves up over it.
You know, when you don't know what it is, it's really hard to beat yourself. I mean, it's hard not to beat yourself up about it, you know? So, you know, you mentioned these genetic factors, and particularly with something like bipolar, or you know, I still say manic depression, but it's like saying on the radio.
You used manic depressive, and you explained why. Like, because there's two different aspects to being manic depressive, and that's why that term might have actually been better than bipolar. Because now everybody says they're bipolar, and actually, unless you've been diagnosed, you might just be talking out of turn, and frankly, making a mockery of the people who are really going through something.
Absolutely, sort of diminishing their experience.
Talk about that.
So yeah, because a lot of people are like, oh my gosh, I'm so schizo. You know, like, you know, they're completely diminishing the value of what it is that you're experiencing. And also in what we are, you know, I think people are confusing a polarized society with bipolar, like literally just not understanding what the word is. So, oh gosh, I'm trying to frame out my bed.
Is there someone in it?
Oh, please God, I wish there was. Sorry, the last one just got kicked to the curb.
The life and times of Nina Hasty.
The life and times of Nina Hasty. I must start dating adults. Maybe they'll last in relationships longer. Anyway, so for the BCCSA, I do mean people over the age of 30 when I say adults. Anyway, manic depression you experience mania, right? So the mania is hypermania. So you can be extremely effective, very hyperactive. Your brain is firing at 1,000 miles an hour, right? You're just super functional. Mm-hmm. And the point I wanted to come to before this actually was manic depression or bipolar disorder can be dormant. You might have the genetic predisposition for it your whole life, but then it's triggered by a stressful event or triggered by a drug or alcohol infused or situation. So you might be predisposed to it, but then never actually experience the thing. So how come my sister isn't bipolar?
Yeah.
You know, why is she, quote unquote, why is she not crazy? How come you the one? well, maybe, you know, she had a different set of circumstances growing up, you know, and maybe she didn't blow her brains out on cocaine in her 20s, you know, like, you know, like I did.
As CS says, you have lived.
I have lived, honey. Child, one thing about me, I live.
You have squeezed all the juice out of that lemon, girl. You've seen some things. You've zipped and zoned. You've lived.
So
I've lived.
This mania is then, it's this this real burst of energy which could last for hours or for minutes. You feel super productive.
Could last days as well, Gavin. Who's Gavin?
Gavin.
There's something I have not been called for a while, but don't worry. Okay, so mania, you said, could last for days as well. But during that time, you're also really difficult to deal with because you are totally in your own head. You're almost babbling incoherently. You're doing hundreds of things at the same time. You think you're being effective. You may be very irritating too. And people will think, well, what the hell is wrong with this person? You know, that's unusual.
Yes. So unreasonable. Unreasonable.
Mm. But then what comes after that?
So then because there's like the what happens in the brain is there might be a peak in serotonin or supplemented serotonin or dopamine via drugs, right? Mm. Or alcohol or perhaps just the mania or even caffeine. So the body's now gone ahead and said, okay, cool. I've got all these happy drugs in my brain. And then what happens is because that brain in particular cannot produce its own natural happy hormone. So it cannot produce the same amount of serotonin as everybody else. And as a result, the knock-on effect of the dopamine, which makes you feel happy once you've got the correct amount of serotonin in your brain, you crash. You are exceptionally sad. The physiological response is a depressed state, a sensation of being stuck, a sensation of a dark cloud being over you, a sensation of being the reversed unreasonable sensation in the other way. So when you're in the dark space at a 10, so let's say it can go from 1 to 10, I'm having a bit of a down day, to a 10 where you're completely unable to move, you physically can't get out of bed, you can't talk, you can't access anything, you're unable to function as a human being in society. And you have these depressive thoughts. You want to die. You think that you don't deserve to live. Now, you can have a downswing and still be at like a 1 or a 2 or a 3. This happens to me. I had a day the other day. I had so many things. I only had about 5.5 hours sleep and I had a long day ahead of me, fitting with Levi's. I had to do this thing. The shoot carried on longer than I thought it would. And as that shoot progressed and I'm sitting with these people, it was like Levi's house. They're fitting me. I'm trying on different clothes. There's a guy filming me. I have to be on.
Yeah.
So it wasn't a matter of I could just like sort of relax and process this low on my own. And as this thing, as the day progressed, I just kept getting more and more paranoid. And it was the photographer or videographer's first time dealing with me. And I kept apologizing for existing. I was kept going, I'm sorry, Jonathan. I'm so sorry. I'm sorry that you have to meet me like this. I'm sorry that I'm, I don't know why. And I kept apologizing to the people there and they were all confused as to why I was apologizing. Yeah. But what was happening inside my brain was an experience of paranoia. I was like, these people are judging me. These people hate me. These people have hated me their whole life. Or they don't think I deserve to live. They've been plotting against me. And actually this whole thing is a farce. The whole reason I'm here is because the one chick knows the other chick. Her neighbor once hated me in 2017 because that chick dressed me. And this is the narrative that's happening in my brain, all because of a lack of sleep.
Yeah. And I mean, you
so
said,
Nina, is this, sorry, this going to be a,
sorry, you said like,
is this going to be a way of life now? Is this something that you are learning to manage? Is this something that can be cured?
So I've been on medication since I was about 17 on and off. Obviously, when I was in active addiction from the age of sort of about, you know, like when it got really aggressive, between about 24 and 30, I wasn't on medication. And so I was sort of self-medicating, alcohol, cocaine, tranquilizers, you know, sort of on that, trying to maintain my own mood, excuse me, but from a recreational perspective, because obviously I could experience what I was experiencing. I want to feel better. What must I do? I must take drugs.
Absolutely.
And after 30, I went back to a psychiatrist after I'd, you know, been clean for a little bit and the brain fog had lifted and I knew that there was, I wouldn't interfere with any brain chemicals, because also there was one time that I did go back onto medication, in this, when I was about 24 and I got the most horrendous migraines as a result of a reaction to some of the medication, but that's because they were counterindicating with all the stuff that I was on. But like debilitating migraines, I couldn't walk. It was horrendous. I've never experienced anything like that. So you also have to, make sure that when you do go onto medication, that your brain is clear, that there are no remnants of any sort of other chemicals in your system, because it can be very, very dangerous. So to answer your question, Sia, is this something I'm learning to deal with? Yes, it's a lifetime of learning. The brain is, it's dynamic. It's, you know, you're learning, there's new neuro pathways that you're experiencing all the time. Some good, some bad, or some old neuro pathways that you're using that have been part of a pattern that you have developed since you were young as a negative coping mechanisms. And a lot of that can be bad behavior. So being shitty to people, being aggressive, reacting instead of responding, you know, making it all about you, having a little pity party. So what happens is once your brain chemicals are okay, but your behavior is still patterned to your previous coping mechanisms, that's when it can become dangerous and you blame everything on your mental health, quote unquote.
Well,
so
you know,
there's a responsibility as well.
I wanted to ask you about this because now, you know, suddenly we're at a time where, you know, people like Prince Harry and Meghan Markle are talking about mental health like it's, you know, it's like it's having a bad night of sleep. And frankly, you know, these are like the most privileged people in the world and there's not a whole lot of sympathy. Yeah. And it has become trendy for everyone to assume some kind of victim status wherever they can. And if they don't actually have a terrible life in terms of those categories that I mentioned earlier, you know, finances, health, relationships, whatever it might be, then they make one up. Then they go, oh, well, I'll claim to have huge mental health issues. And maybe they do and maybe they don't. It's not for me to judge. It's not for you to judge. But it does seem to me like it's particularly trendy at the moment. And I'm not in any way saying we shouldn't take everyone seriously just in case they are going through it. I think that's probably a better default position. But it is annoying to me that there are a bunch of people who've climbed on this bandwagon and who are actually doing a lot to make it seem that it's not as serious as it is. And that worries me.
Yeah, to diminish the validity of it and the intensity of it and the, however, I am just going to say something. Remember when I said that bipolar can be triggered by an incident. So perhaps Meghan has lived her whole life, you know, la-di-da, and the stress of, I mean, yes, there's the privilege and all the rest of it. I mean, I don't want to get into the Meghan Markle debate. However, there could have been a trigger from the pressure of that British media, which is fucking horrendous. So maybe there was a trigger. And as I said, you know, it was lying dormant and she was predisposed to it. And all of a sudden she fucked out.
I mean, I always see these things that people post and it never irritates me to see this, funnily enough. And I'm the kind of person who will make fun of just about anything. But when someone says, you know, for example, you don't know what somebody else is going through, so just try to be kind. And I think maybe if we could all just
fuck off. Fuck off with the kind of be kind. No, okay, I'm joking.
But I mean, really, like,
I'm joking,
Derek. I know, but it's a serious concern. Like, I do think that there are too many people in the world who are so wrapped up in like trying to define themselves or trying to make themselves important or trying to get a little bit of attention that they forget that there's someone there who's on the edge who might have not had the amount of sleep that they need, who maybe has just come down off some kind of drug binge or who's got just terrible brain chemistry that doesn't help them to deal with stuff. And you get them at the wrong time. And in some way, you could indirectly make them do something that everyone's going to regret. Let's just kind of remember that because that's the takeaway I got from all of your stuff is that unless you understand all of this, and remember, it differs hugely from individual to individual. So there isn't a group classification that works, that fits the mold, the cookie cutter mold for everybody. And I think we've got to be aware of this stuff, right?
I mean, Gareth, I couldn't have said it better. You're right. Be aware. And what that, you know, the being kind thing, being kind, you know, again, it's also a very trendy thing to say.
Sure.
It's like, be kind.
I know it's,
and then they don't follow through with that kind of behavior. Being kind involves not making everything about you in a society where we're taught to make everything about you. So we're living in this dichotomy. Ooh. We're living in these double messages, you know, me, I must be amazing. I must do this, you know.
Well, I mean, you see it, you also see it when people die. And unfortunately, this is what kind of brings about so much of that narcissism. And, you know, everybody thinks narcissism is this overt thing where you try to make yourself important. But when someone dies, then you have all these people trying to make it about them. And I posted something on Instagram about this yesterday to say, ooh, better make sure you get those pictures with all the celebrities you like so that when they die, you can post things about you. Know what I mean?
Or screen grab your fucking text messages and post them on the social media. Ugh. Like, okay, cool. You've got connection. Like, yes, we've all got connection. We've got connection. We've got pain. We're experiencing all of these things together. So there was something very interesting that I learned at AA, and it was, so it's also in the very early stages, you know, when you, my first year of sobriety was fucking mortifying. I was like, oh my God, is that what I did? Is that what I said? I mean, you've known me for years. You knew me during active addiction and then like in the early stages of my sobriety. And, you know, I got to the point where I could make jokes about it.
I was one of the people who was petitioning for you to get a constant supply because I thought you were being hilarious and I didn't want you to stop. I'm not the guy.
An enabler, just, ladies and gentlemen, so, an enabler.
Yeah, just so that everybody knows, I'm not the guy you must come to when you have these problems.
That's hysterical. I think, but I was actually sober when I was on Cliff Central. I was already in my sobriety stage, but I was lavishing in my memories. But I'd gotten to the point where I was no longer embarrassed about them and I could celebrate them. But what happens is, you start creating a pity party, like, oh, I'm so bad. I'm the worst person. Me. I'm a terrible person. I did this and I did that.
But it's so self-indulgent.
And that becomes part of that narrative. Yes, it's the self-indulgence. It's the pity party. You've made it again about you. Oh, okay, cool. You're so bad. Yes. Yeah. Okay, cool. Mm-hmm. Get out of yourself.
I just want to point out something here that Tracy's saying. She says, she's listening to us now. She says, feeling emotional versus being depressed, there's a huge difference. You're depressed. You don't feel depressed. You know, like some people also say when they're having a bad day, oh, I'm depressed. Or, you know, like something doesn't go their way. And you should be upset, frankly, when things don't go your way. Otherwise, you're just not connected to reality. That doesn't mean you're depressed.
You know, Gareth, I was with Hanan yesterday, Dr. Hanan Bushkin,
yes,
my cognitive behavioral therapist, who you guys know. Mm. And, you know, I had just had a scheduled appointment as opposed to just kind of, you know, like my friend died and I rushed off to see Hanan. It just was, coincidental. And I said to him, I asked him, what does depression mean? What does it mean to be depressed?
Mm.
And he said, well, we could list symptoms. The sensation of being stuck, of not having, of, so sadness and depression feel the same in terms of, you know, the sensation of being stuck, like, oh, I don't have a solution for this. So that's why people confuse those two. The sensation of being stuck. However, with depression, there are symptoms, physiological symptoms.
Right.
So your brain and your body are now in a position where they are physiologically not able to create the hormones to make you stop feeling unstuck.
That's why you need the medicine as well as the therapy, because you can't get out of it just with the therapy. I mean, just pause this for a second because we've been talking about it for like 20 minutes or 25 minutes or whatever. And I've just got to throw in some headlines, and I know we've got Jean-Jacques Cornish standing by, so we can carry this on in a moment or two, but let me get to some of the headlines for this morning. Sorry to force us to have to change subject so dramatically, but there's quite a lot going on and we don't want to be left behind. Bantu Holomisa wants a vote on Mkhwebane's impeachment committee. Bantu Holomisa is just really struggling for relevance at the moment. And I don't think he's a bad person. We've interviewed him many times before. I do think he's made an enormous difference to our democracy. But really, he's fading fast in terms of his relevance. And, you know, he says a couple of things more than just once in a while that make a huge amount of sense. And I do wish he had more say. But he represents a tiny little party. And he gets a lot more airtime than he's maybe due just because he's been so interconnected with so many people, both in the ANC and out. And, you know, in terms of his position as someone who certainly in the trans guy was very important, he punches well above his weight. But he reckons he should be allowed to vote as well, even though he doesn't have a seat in that committee, because he thinks that she's really bad, this Busisiwe Mkhwebane, and he wants her out. So if you think that that's what's necessary, then you're on Bantu Hulumisa's side. But he really is trying to also stay relevant, which is why he finds this a useful and interesting moment to join in the conversation.
Politicians politicking.
Absolutely. So let's look at that quickly. Then there's the EFF, while we're talking about little parties. There's this bizarre story that came out over the weekend. And again, I am always very reticent, whether they are friends or foes, to take any serious charges, especially of a criminal nature, that are leveled against someone, in this case, rape against Buyiseni Ntlozi. Got to take these things seriously, obviously, but you don't prejudge it, no matter how much you like or dislike the person in question.
Has it confused you, the
totally,
story?
Because totally.
I'm not understanding the statement. I'm not understanding what the police are saying. I'm not understanding what the EFF is saying. I think you have an update on what the EFF's stance is.
So the EFF on Monday said it was aware of coordinated attempts to criminalize its leaders. The Daily Sun reported that Mbuyiseni Ntlozi was being investigated for rape. The newspaper claims the report was based on a 23-year-old woman's affidavit. According to the article, the woman claims she was violated in an upmarket penthouse by a man who goes by the name of Quentin, who she later discovered was Ntlozi. Ntlozi's middle name is Quentin, but he's told the paper, it was a case of mistaken identity. So I know that there are a lot of people who really don't like the EFF, and they look at this and they go, ooh, I knew that Buyiseni Ntlozi was a terrible person. You know, it's like there are people who love Buyiseni Ntlozi who are going to be saying now, no, this is impossible. It must be true that it's mistaken identity. Why don't we wait and see? And if it does end up becoming a criminal matter, all the evidence will have to be brought. If it isn't, it is pure rumor and speculation, and the kind of rumor and speculation that can ruin somebody. And I wouldn't be surprised if there is a lot of really dodgy politicking going on behind the scenes. I also wouldn't be surprised if, frankly, it ended up being true. But let's see. I'm not going to prejudge the situation. And those people who do are giving themselves powers they don't have. You are not Nostradamus, and you also are not a judge in a court in South Africa that has to look at this and weigh up the evidence. And certainly if you were, you don't have the evidence yet. So hold back, everybody, because I hate when these things happen and people just jump in and they've got an opinion, point of view. This is obviously true. This is obviously not true. And then it becomes a whole thing of believe the victim or believe the perpetrator. Who cares what you believe? Let's deal with facts here. We're dealing with people's lives. If it happened, then someone must go to jail. If it didn't happen, then nobody must make allegations that it happened or say, because they might be making it up, that more than what happened happened. So let's just wait and see, shall we? Let's not get ahead of ourselves.
Gareth, you know, I've also been quite public. You know what? Vulnerability is such a trend as well at the moment, which I think that's ironic as well, because I feel that vulnerability is important, but I think it needs to have a validity in the conversation that you're trying to have. I have shared about my rape experience. I've shared about my alcoholism. I've shared about all of these things. So you don't want to just jump on every bandwagon, because I feel like a lot of people have experienced a lot of trauma. However, with regards to this, I have experienced rape. I've experienced date rape. The same scenario with this chick where you sort of like half drugged at a party, seen someone, been confused. You're like, mm-hmm. Did I have sex or was I had sex with that kind of experience? It's dangerous on both sides.
Hugely dangerous.
You know? So, you know, just to mention someone's name and to Google them, you know, I could have Googled some guy called Gavin and been like, you know, actually, it sounds like Gareth. There was a blonde man in my vicinity. Or, you know, that's dangerous. But I don't want to diminish the experience that this woman is having.
Yeah.
I also don't want
to. I don't care much for anyone's personal experience if it's a criminal matter, though. There are ways to deal with these things. And she can go and talk to her therapist about her experience if she has one, or her family or her friends. And she can make a story of it once it's been proven. But you don't go around alleging things have happened irresponsibly. And you also, if you are the kind of person who has been through something and you want us to take it seriously, then you need to have your ducks in a row. And I know many women have gone through awful experiences and they can't always put it together. And by no means am I saying that this is made up. And at the same time, by no means am I saying Buyiseni Ndlozi is definitely a rapist. We've got to be careful, because the moment we do that, yeah. and it happens now on social media, you've got a kangaroo court of people who've decided this woman must be taken down because she's making fake allegations. I mean, that's hugely dangerous, as it is to it's allege something's happened. Yeah, we've got to take it seriously.
It's all dangerous because you also don't want to position yourself as a rape apologist that feeds Definitely. Into rape culture, which feeds into this conversation.
Yeah.
Gareth, you know, I think this is a very important thing for you to discuss. I'm going to step off for 2 minutes and
no worries. I'll catch up with you later. Yeah, we've got Jean-Jacques coming on in a moment. Nina's going to make a quick call and we'll get on with that in a second. And Jean-Jacques is standing by, so I don't want to take too long. But while we're talking about something which just beleaguers and bedevils South Africa endlessly. 131 reported rapes in Mitchell's Plain between just March and December of last year, and zero convictions. That's according to the Western Cape Community Safety Department. You know, there's a whole lot of slacktivism online about this stuff and people claiming that we've got this rape culture, and we certainly have a problem, a huge problem in this country. But when 131 rapes are reported, and you can only imagine how many are not even reported, and there are zero convictions for the whole of last year in terms of lockdown, that is something we should be horrifically embarrassed about. And it really, it is unacceptable on every single level. It makes a mockery of our justice system. It makes perpetual victims of women who eventually think, well, you know what, I can't get out of this because no one's going to help me. And even if I do take it seriously and I do go to the police and I do open a case and I am open and honest with my family and my friends and they support me and all the things that I need to happen in order to make this happen take place from my point of view, and then the system lets you down like this, it is just unacceptable. And those 131 reported rapes are just the tip of the iceberg in this country, and it frightens me what's going on under the water. So the questions of how these rape cases are dealt with and investigated and prosecuted are being brought to the fore after worrying statistics came out of – that's just Mitchell's Plain on Monday. And not one conviction, which is just awful. And the MEC for Community Safety, Albert Fritz, said – that there were only 83 arrests, and he's asked about the remaining 48 rape cases. He said, you know, of those 83 cases, 59 people were still awaiting trial, and only one trial's actually commenced. So we are letting people down, innocent people who deserve more and deserve better. Ugly, ugly story. It's not the kind of thing that can make for a good start to your Tuesday, I'm afraid, but we're not going to ignore it. There's a manhunt after an execution shooting in Paris. Just briefly, a man in his 30s was killed and a female security guard injured at the Henri Dunant Geriatric Hospital, which is also a COVID vaccination center. Witnesses says the attacker shot the man in the head before calmly walking away and making off on a motorcycle. Like in a movie. The local mayor says terrorism does not appear to have been the motive. The mayor of the 16th district, Francis Spiner, added that the vaccination center did not seem to be a target either. A local police officer told the BMF TV channel that the attack looked like a settling of scores. So very bizarre situation in France. And then finally, as far as headlines go this morning, this from EWN, the UK has launched an inquiry into the lobbying scandal involving ex-Prime Minister David Cameron. You know, this is why, and I love when politicians think they've gotten away with things. And this also happened to Nicolas Sarkozy. And then they are later brought in front of the court and forced to explain. And sometimes they're also sent to jail, although rarely with politicians, over things that they didn't do according to the book while they were in office. And I just think, you know, if you have very strict rules for politicians, then the rest of us will probably follow those strict rules too. If you have very lax rules for politicians and they can get away with murder, then the ordinary people think, well, if they can get away with it, so can we. So David Cameron's come out and had to defend himself on the lobbying of ministers prior to the collapse of a finance firm called Greensill. A day after he broke his silence on the scandal, Downing Street said the inquiry would be led by a senior lawyer, Nigel Boardman, and they would report back promptly. So we will see what happens there. It is time for African Analysis. This is where we talk to Jean-Jacques Cornish, who is an expert on the continent and someone who has helped us to understand what's going on in Africa to a far greater degree than any of us could have on our own. So, Jean-Jacques, nice to see you, and thanks for being on the TV show this week. We had Jean-Jacques on when we recorded yesterday for So What Now, and he'll be on tomorrow night on the TV show. How are you, sir? You're on mute, Jean-Jacques. Yeah, just unmute your microphone and then we should be good to go. Ah, voilà.
Is that better?
Voilà. Yeah, there we are.
Thank you. You've given me a great idea. You know, I watched the Masters or bits of the Masters. It would not occur to me to play a game of golf, but I like watching it.
Mm-hmm.
And when they see the guy emerging as the winner,
mm-hmm.
in this case, the Japanese, first Japanese guy to win a major, they take him and measure him for that green jacket that they give him, you know.
Yeah.
I think that when you stand for parliament or you become a politician, you should immediately be taken somewhere and measured for an orange jumpsuit. Doesn't that sound?
I think that's a very good idea. I like that a lot.
You've got your suit ready. You just pop into the cell.
Yeah. And we provisionally book you a cell. I mean, it does mean that people who take up political office will be a little more careful if they know that they could be investigated even post their term of office. And we've got a former president in this country who he thinks he's like Teflon and that the law doesn't apply to him. We will see what happens. At the moment, the law doesn't apply to him.
It's not exclusive in that regard. Many politicians believe it doesn't apply to them, you know.
Mm.
And, I mean, we have David Cameron now. He was lobbying. It was all about vaccines as well, you know. So when it involves COVID vaccines and skullduggery, then you've got serious crimes. I mean, Tedros Ghebreyesus, who we're going to talk about in a minute, he refers to any kind of fraud involving COVID as murder. And I think he's absolutely right. So, I mean, Cameron has some explaining to do. And as Prime Minister, do you think he didn't know what he was doing? And the people that he spoke to didn't know what was happening?
Well,
you know, it boggles the mind. And when they stand there in Parliament and fulminate against people, they'd say, well, you know, the ignorance of the law is no excuse. Or what was he thinking? And would he for a moment think anybody in their right mind or any sane thinking person wouldn't understand what was happening? Well, in this case, he believes they don't.
Well, it's time for us to catch up on African Analysis. It's our bi-monthly feature. It's sponsored by the Johannesburg Business School, and we look at what's going on the African continent. So, JJ Cornish, let's go straight to the WHO. You mentioned Tedros, the doctor at the head of the WHO, and he says that people should be accused of murder if they've been complicit in COVID irregularity, disinformation, lies, deceit, inaction. All of that stuff. Just explain where these comments come from. We seem to have lost JJ.
I mean, that was earlier comments. I'm always reluctant to speak to you. The rock we talk about is this one.
Hey.
COVID is a long way from over. A long, long way from over. Confusion is caused in the systemic continue. And Candy says people under control in months.
No, JJ, I'm gonna let you go there. That's it's getting messy. We're just going to try and reconnect with JJ because that's no good. Sia, just tell him to come back on. I didn't understand a word. You know when it takes a while and then it all comes on at once? It's like it buffered and then suddenly it sounds like a word salad. No use at all.
There was a dot there that yeah, I did by not the way, catch at all.
We'll also talk to JJ in a moment when he's back about Somalia and about why Ghana is the African headquarters for a major organization. We'll find out all about that in just a moment or two. It's always good to check in with JJ. There's a whole lot of stuff going on that we don't know about unless we chat to him. And by the way, we'll also have Sibulele Sikoshosha, who is an entrepreneur and the founder of the Dumele Group, later on in the show to talk about business in South Africa and what's going on there. Also, the lessons that entrepreneurs need to learn and be aware of in South Africa. And Sibulele will be joining us. She's in Cape Town, and she'll be joining us on Skype or on Zoom or on this, whatever this stuff is called that we're on. What is it called
whatever
again?
Whatever this stuff is called.
You're on YouTube with us, so that's all that matters, right? I mean, I don't know what to call it. Sometimes I get it wrong.
Don't worry, she'll come to us. Yeah, that's the bottom line.
She'll come to us. She'll be here. If you can hear us now, you'll hear her. We also have a brand new season of Blind History launching this week, which is very, very exciting. And we'll get to that in a moment. JJ, I see you're back.
Hopefully.
Yes. Sorry, so you were telling us about Tedros and the speech that he made.
Yes.
So let's pick it up there.
No, I'm not getting him.
No, this is very frustrating. Sorry, JJ. I don't know what's going on there, but we're struggling with probably some internet issues. Who the hell knows? I'm just going to go to some of the comments here. Oh. No, see ya. Let's just see if we can't try one more time. This is much too annoying when it buffers like that. Very, very difficult. We'll come back to Nina as well. She hasn't left us, I promise. She's joining us in just a moment or two. So we'll come back with Nina Hasty just now. Just trying to get a better connection with JJ Cornish to see what this Dr. Tedros says. Just by the way, I mean, he's not an uncontroversial figure himself, Tedros Ghebreyesus. He's originally from Ethiopia, and you'll remember he was appointed to the WHO and as head of the WHO in some controversy. A big backer of his is China, and as a result, he's a big backer of China. But we've got to hear what he had to say, because now we've started this conversation, so I don't want to leave it hanging. Should we try one more time, Sia? Let's just give it one more go. Hi,
okay, you got me again?
Now it's good. Go ahead.
Hopefully. Well, we were saying Tedros Ghebreyesus is saying the confusion and complacency rule when it comes to dealing with COVID, that the ICUs overflowing and the people dying in what is the third wave is totally avoidable, and that we can end this pandemic in months if we bring it under control. And that will require proper vaccination. You know, we're getting stories, Gareth, of the economic hit on by the pandemic being less, certainly in Africa, than we feared it would be.
Mm-hmm.
But we still have, I think, on this continent, a third wave to come. The second wave being 30% heavier than the first. I think the second wave being heavier, 30% heavier indeed, yes. I think the third will be even heavier than that. And the vaccinations in Africa, that is, of course, the very big problem. We've got to become.
But is that true?
Jabs into the arms of Africans all over the continent.
Is that true? In South Africa, we've pretty much reached a stage of herd immunity despite a hugely inefficient rollout of vaccines. I mean, we're seeing numbers that are absolutely minimal at the moment. In fact, I don't even know why we're still at level one, because it appears to all intents and purposes that we have a very low infection rate at the moment. The reported cases are lower than ever. Our hospitals have never been overrun. So it's all it's sounding like a bit of scaremongering. You know, if you just look back instead of forward and try to predict things, it seems that we're actually not in a bad position.
I don't think, again, I think that's, I'm hearing a bit of complacency. I'm afraid. Are really not those that pertain. I think it's what happens in 2 weeks' time, and we not looking backwards, but looking forwards. Every time it has occurred, the waves have hit us sometime later. So I don't think we can afford to become complacent at all. This issue of herd immunity, the number of people who've been vaccinated is lamentably low still. And the rollout of the vaccination program has not been successful. The government, I think, cracked down perhaps too early with the first wave. But I think the tough have been necessary.
All right, I'm afraid I'm going to have to let JJ go here. It's getting too frustrating to try and have a conversation now with this internet issue that we've got. I just want to point out, in contrast, now I'm not looking for a fight with JJ, but the new cases as of the 11th of April, only 931 new cases. The 7-day average, 928. Remember, we reached our peak in January at 17,400 new cases on that day. And I'm pulling this straight from the COVID data that was updated 2 days ago by the government. So we have no reason to disbelieve it. We've had only 53,000 deaths in South Africa. And people keep telling us there's this boogeyman around the corner. And I'm sorry, I just don't see it. So based only on what we've been through, I don't know how much of this is necessarily worth worrying about. And if Dr. Tedros Ghebreyesus thinks that I should be executed for that. It's too bad, I suppose. I'm going to have to call it off for this morning, Sia. I don't think we're going to go back to Africa. We're already at 7, and we will try to make up for this. We'll try to get JJ back. It's very frustrating when this stuff happens, and trust me, it's happened more than a couple of times on the TV show too. It drives me absolutely crazy. I actually long for the day where we can all be in studios again, talking to each other, and if someone's late, you just know that they're around the corner or whatever. You don't have to keep trying to connect. It's very frustrating for all parties involved. So, JJ, I'm sorry about that. We'll try to get back to you. All right, it is 7, and that means that we've got a whole hour more for you on the way. We've got Nina Hasty, who will be back with us in just a moment or two. We'll also check in with Sibu Lele, who I told you about earlier, and we'll talk about entrepreneurship and lots of other things. It's all coming up. CliffCentral.com on a Tuesday morning. Let us know what you're up to. All you have to do is get hold of us on 0797482090, or you can send us a message on YouTube. CliffCentral.com.